There's so many places you can find Somebody Likes It. You can subscribe directly to us on iTunes, or you can also get at us on Stitcher. Tell your friends, because everybody loves a podcast.
It's been a while since you said that, Kevin.
I know.
It used to be a staple of every...
What did he say?
Because Mark said, all right, Shane, I'm coming at you. And Kevin said, Shane's coming out.
Oh, that was like an everything.
It was an everyday thing for several years.
Yeah, so
it's like the chalice disappeared as well.
We just beat that disco line into submission until we could no longer utter it.
I just want to say one thing real quick. We won't dally very long here before we play theme
dilly
music.
Dilly dally, as it were.
Dilly dally. Dilly, yeah. Dilly, that's something
that, like, your great uncle would say.
Yeah, but that needs
don't
to be said
dally.
More. Don't dilly dally. I mean, more people should say, I think we should, I don't understand, like, you know, like a lot of times, like, somebody will say, like, some kind of old slang, and they're like, I'm going to bring that back. You can't really bring back dilly dally.
I tried to bring back no doy, and it didn't take.
Well, and if you brought back dilly dally, and it took a long time. I mean, isn't that appropriate? Like, wouldn't you think that would just take a...
Oh, I knew you were going to be on fire. Since the second we walked in the door, Kevin's just been like, boom, 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 just throwing darts, throwing dad darts.
Dad darts,
yeah.
I don't even know what that is.
So what were you... So
just real quick. So for some reason, I hear, like, songs on the way over here that... I never...
You're not going to infect the rest of the...
No. I already talked to you about Bon Jovi. No, I was listening to Sweet Child of Mine by Guns N' Roses. And Guns N' Roses is decent. That first record is...
behind that record.
Yeah, it's a really good, decent record. However, Sweet Child of Mine, he can't hide behind the loud guitars and stuff. And so, dude, those are some of the dumbest fucking lyrics I have ever heard in my entire life. Let me... Just in case you, I pulled them up on my phone, but let me just tell you a couple of them. She's got eyes of the bluest skies, as if they thought of rain. I hate to look into those eyes and see an ounce of pain. Her hair reminds me of a
warm, safe place
where, as a child, I lie and pray for the thunder and the rain to quietly pass me by. What? Like, number one, like
those are like. Like Noel Gallagher lyrics.
No, dude, those are like shit that you like write on the back of a book cover when you're in eighth grade about the girl that's sitting
exactly
in front of you that
like
you have a crush on.
Noel Gallagher.
Okay,
lyrics.
Well, yeah, right.
About as profound.
Have a great summer.
No. Well, see, but here's the thing about Noel Gallagher is that he can string together words that rhyme that sound like when you first hear them that they might be about something.
Slowly walking down the hall, faster than a cannonball.
Hey, that's the,
what,
that's,
dude?
What? What the fuck is that? Well, see, but that's the thing about Noel Gallagher is like, upon reflection, you're like, what? What the fuck
that
are you
means
think?
Fucking
it's
nothing.
Nonsense. Yeah. Like, yeah, Noel Gallagher's like, but see, this is what's kind of so pathetic about. I mean, don't get me wrong, pathetic all the way to the goddamn bank. But fucking Axl Rose.
Like, that's all that song needed.
Yeah.
And there you go.
Yeah.
That
anyway.
Song sounds like eighth grade to me. So.
It does sound like eighth grade. All right.
All right, kids.
I'm Shane.
Ryan.
I'm Kevin.
Mark.
Somebody Likes It.
So Father John Misty, frequent subject or a topic
on this
here podcast
on the show. Isn't he the only one? The only one that, unless we're doing like a specialty week or something, that he's popped up. We've had two albums by. I mean, we've had two Pavement albums and stuff like Yola Tingo, but those were
specialty deals.
Specialties, yeah,
I think you might be right on that. Never boring. But he appeared.
He is never boring.
Yeah, he appeared on Saturday Night Live with a giant horn section and like a bass saxophone, which I'd never seen before.
Was it giant in the sense that there were a lot of horns, or were they just like really big people?
Just
with
really
horns?
Tall people with.
Oh, okay,
that's good. Tiny horns.
I just kind of had this idea when he said that, like they're like really right, exactly. They're like little toy horns and like really tall.
You're Kareem Abdul-Jabbar
with a tiny saxophone.
Anyway,
I'm just the co-pilot, Kevin.
Yes, exactly.
Anyhow, for some reason, NPR decided to publish the lyrics of the songs that he needed to, of course, as one does on SNL. And they're kind of the opposite of Sweet Child of Mine. like, total entertainment forever. Like, the first three words are already gold. Betting Taylor Swift. Every Night Inside the Oculus Rift. And I'm going to skip around a little bit, but there's some stuff. That guy is just constantly. No gods to rule us, no drugs to soothe us, no myths to prove stuff, no love to confuse us. Not bad for a race of demented monkeys.
Taylor Swift songs that he did in the, or what, who was it?
He did the cover of Ryan Adams, in the style of Lou Reed
in Velvet Underground, which if you can still find it online, which I'm sure it's still.
No, it's amazing.
On YouTube somewhere.
It's really great.
It's fantastic. Like, yeah. We highly recommend it. But the last couple stanzas are, when the historians find us, we'll be in our homes, plugged into our hubs, skin and bones, a frozen smile on every face as the stories replay. This must have been a wonderful place. Like, that dude can write.
Yeah, yeah. He sells it too, man. It's funny. I just was thinking about that song on the on his first record, Fear Fun, where it's like that Canadian shaman came too many mushrooms. I can't remember the exact line, but.
Didn't he, like, attend a Taylor Swift concert in Australia and take acid?
Yeah, something like that. I saw that.
And just wrote a really erudite essay about it. Yeah, never dull.
No.
Shane, what do you got for us this week?
All right. So we're going to listen to the Go-To-Beds. And their album from 2014, Poor People Are Revolting, which...
Double entendre. Poor people, not four people.
Poor people are revolting, which, you know...
It was like, which four?
Multiple... Yeah, I know, which four people. well, never mind. I was going to get political there for a second. You can take that in a couple of different ways. You know what I really like about this? This band reminds me of being 22 and in a sweaty club.
Oh, Beerland.
Like, yeah, yeah. Or Electric Lounge.
Like a few years ago when I was like kind of... You know, working with bands a little bit more, I was in a lot of situations where they would have fit perfectly on whatever bill that was.
Yeah, and I like that they have revived the punky pun, as it were. There's several song titles on here, but so I heard this band a couple of weeks ago on Sound Opinions, NPR show, great show. Don't really ever catch it, but I happened to catch them and they were playing live. They were playing mostly songs off their newer record.
Well, this came out, what, 2014?
This came out in 2014. Last year, 2016, they had a newer record. But, I heard I don't know what the full title, it's New York's All Right, but there's a full song title. It's like New York's All Right if you like, it's a longer title. It's like parenthetical. I heard that, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to throw Ryan a bone on this.
Oh, no, I appreciate it, man. Like, the second I started listening to it, I was like, oh, Shane.
Yeah, no, I figured.
I love you, man.
I love that the album after this, by the way, it's called Blood Sugar Sex Traffic, but it's like sex, like secretaries.
That's their whole thing. Is they go? That's their wanna. S-E-C-S.
Yeah, this and they're like.
They come back to it a lot,
there's
apparently.
Like sex machine, but that's like regular, I don't know.
Sex tape.
Sex, no, oh, no, 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 I don't
yeah.
know.
Yeah, on this record.
On this record.
Well, yeah. No. I'm sorry. Fucking Machine is what I'm thinking. Oh, I just accidentally turned on the shit. Yeah, Fucking Machine, which, by the way, I just want to say this before we start talking about this band. I really, really, really appreciate that in the song Fucking Machine, they sample Everybody Dance Now by CNC Music.
Oh, yeah. No, a broad smile over here.
Yes.
That came on.
Yeah, Ryan, why don't you tell us how you felt about this one?
I just love it with every fiber of my being. I mean, it's
that's
not,
me.
Okay.
That's that sound, by the way, is the sound of me like slam dunking for Ryan.
You totally did. Knocked it out of the park. You know, bottom of the ninth, two outs, bases loaded. Slam dunk.
Well, and you got to remember that Ryan is the person that's brought us, I believe, to Parquet Court tracks to cover at different parts of the show. So this is definitely
well, in the Stooges.
Well, I was going to say, like, and also there's like that fucking like proto-punk and punk shit basically from like 1972 to 1979. Ryan, like,
well, I mean, like in the best way, this record had me like trying to define whether or not this is punk. And then eventually I was just like, I don't care. It's just fucking good rock
it's
music.
It's punk-y, you know? Like
yeah, in the same way that like Nirvana's Nevermind is punk-y, and
right, but
the first Strokes record is punk-y, but like this is where punk should have gone.
I mean, these guys are from Philly, right?
But no, Pittsburgh.
Okay, well, yeah. Pennsylvania, close. So they...
people in Philadelphia probably be pissed at you for
or vice
that.
Versa.
Well, that's because they want to fucking be. They'd rather be living in Pittsburgh than fucking Philadelphia. But I mean, that's a whole other story. But I mean, this record sounds like late 70s New York in a lot of ways. Like
yeah,
with a little bit of like just a little bit of California hardcore with the sense of humor. Like it's more jokey.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, these guys you can definitely tell like they have influences, obviously, but they just sound like them. Like, it's not like any one thing necessarily sticks out, except for on Affection. They kind of sound like, fucking Gang of Four.
They've
got a little bit of Gang of Four thing going on, and it's just musically. But yeah, there's a little bit of Gang of Four there, but like more than not, or more so than that, like Wire. And I can hear these things, but like it's not like beating me over the head like a lot of stuff that we'll cover that's kind of newish.
The only thing for me, like, okay, so this album personally, like, it kind of in a way I enjoyed it about as much as last. I liked the record we listened to last time. I liked this more, but it reminded me. I just wish there were a couple of fucking home run standout tracks. I just wish there were a few more of them on there. The whole record is a great listen. Like, all the way through. Like, I love it. I'd love to have it on vinyl. I just wish there were just a couple more that really... Like, that New York's All Right song, that Generations, by the way, that's another punny one. It's Jenna, like a female's name.
Mm-hmm. Generations.
Like, yeah, now it occurred to me that would be, like, the roller derby name of, like, whatever
yes.
that's... Well, yeah, of this record. Yeah, yeah.
Totally. What really impressed me about this, though, is like, I've been to so many shows where it was this type of band, and then when they actually lay the stuff down... You know, to record it, it doesn't translate the way it sounds
yeah,
live. And
sense.
This sounds like they capture the energy of their live
show. Well, and that's what I'm saying. Like, I love the way that this album sounds. Like, personally, for myself, I wish there had been just a couple more like real standout tracks because they're obviously capable of it. I like. There's not a song on here that I.
Well, and we've got South by coming up next week, so now I want to go see if like they're going to be in town because it looks like that they're at that kind of point in their career where it would make a lot of sense to come. So, at some point, I'll figure that out.
Right. Well, fuck it, man. Well, let's. Why don't we listen to one of these? Why don't we listen to that New York's All Right, and come back and chat. That's a good-ass song.
Yeah, man. Like, that song is just fun. And, like, I was trying to tell you this while you were bartending the other day. Like, this is a band in the most literal way. Like, they're banded. They sound like they're having fun with each other, and they know exactly.
Well, and that's another thing. Like, when I heard them on the on that
they were playing live.
Show, they were playing live, and they just fucking sounded great live. So, yeah.
They sound like they love playing with each other.
Hey, by the way, so there
and if you took any one of them out of the equation, it would be just different and wrong.
The parenthetical on this song, so it's New York's All Right, and the parenthetical is if you like sex and phones.
S-E-C-S?
No, it's just regular sex,
oh, okay.
But if you like sex and phones, so.
All right. Well, I like both of those things, and I guess maybe I'd like New York.
Yeah, New York's all right. Yeah.
I don't know.
What's up, Kevin? I see you have some.
He has notes.
You have notes.
Yeah. Something occurs to me. So I was reading through the NPR piece on this album, and one of the things that they note in it, it says, you know, we talked a little bit about the fact that the band comes from Pittsburgh. It says the Go-To-Bed members come from Pittsburgh, PA, a place notorious for keeping great local bands to itself. But the racket these guys kick up on their first album, Poor People Revolting, might be too strong for the city to contain, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, it occurs to me, if that's true, like if Pittsburgh keeps good bands to itself, I mean, they're pretty upfront with Mr. Rogers. Like, give us some good bands too, man.
He wasn't a band.
No, he was not a band. But they're putting Mr. Rogers out everywhere. And I think it'd be great.
On this podcast.
Yes, exactly.
Wait. I'm confused. Like, what is the Mr. Rogers?
Fred Rogers was from Pittsburgh, and I think that show taped out of the...
Yeah, there's a lot of that PBS stuff that comes out.
I thought
out
it was, like, Philadelphia.
Mm. You're just having all kinds of trouble in those two cities in a big, bad way.
Well, I mean, it is a lot sleepier. Like, if you know, in the beginning of the Mr. Rogers show, like, it is a lot sleepier than Philly. If it were in Philadelphia, there would be, like, people getting shot and, like, condoms on the street and stuff. Like, you know, it's a lot more
like
idyllic.
Used needles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I just think it's interesting that they were, you know, Pittsburgh as a city, you know.
You got your, like, Fred Rogers. You got your...
You got your Fred
quasi-punk bands.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I really think that, like, they keep them to themselves just generally means that, like, not a whole lot of great bands have broken out of Pittsburgh.
Well, I just want to point
out, I think Kip Winger was from Pittsburgh.
Kip Winger.
I weirdly just know one of those weird things I knew.
We watched, you were not here, Ryan. We, like, a couple years ago, I went ahead and played the video for, in a few minutes with, for, I don't think you were here, for 17 by Winger.
I don't think so.
Are you familiar with the song?
I know the song.
The chorus is, "She's only 17. Daddy says she's too young, but she's old enough for me." The guy's like
charming.
In his 30s.
Yeah.
Yes. Charming. The fucking 80s. This is just sleaze bags.
Well, yeah, Ringo Starr did that cover. It was like, "She's 16, she's beautiful, and she's mine."
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Anyway, I want to throw in one more piece, or one more little snippet from this NPR review. They say, were these guys from New York City, they'd probably be too tired and broke to play this with this level of fevered, feral inspiration. But with no fear of being priced out, they launch into one of the greatest arguments against Big Apple living with their single New York's All Right. Like the album's title, the song's a double-edged sword, couching the relative excitement of New York and hearing all about it from everyone who's moved there against the reality of people staring into their cell phones on crowded sidewalks, constantly trying to maintain a standard of living that the go-to-beds can enjoy for next to nothing. So, anyway,
it's like a
Chamber of Commerce argument from the NPR guy.
So Mark has, like, behind on the monitor here, it's
their Sub Pop button.
It's the Sub Pop thing. They're talking
so
about
great.
It. But I just, it's all incredibly funny, but this is, I think, the funniest thing. It said, "And sure, their live shows have often been compared to an all-night party where I feared for my life and the lives of everybody in the five-block radius."
It just sounds like you wrote it, dude.
I think we had the same sense of humor.
It's true.
Yeah. No, it's it is quite something. If you get a chance, go take a look at
this. Where is this? It's like on
it's the Sub Pop site. It's their Sub Pop band page.
Yeah, these guys are pretty funny. Like, but you know, like that song.
They combine, like, serious raw talent. Like, they're actually good songs. But they don't take themselves too seriously.
No. But can I...
A la Gang of Four.
It's... God, don't even get me started about fucking Gang... Like, the Karl Marx goes on spring break. They are the oral equivalent of, like, the feeling to me of being, like, sweaty in a fucking tiny club where there's no air conditioning. Why don't these clubs have air conditioning, by the way? It's hot as fuck, and there's, like, 150
it's
or...
It's more authentic, Shane.
There's like
it's
one,
also
there's,
cheaper.
There's like cheaper is about right. I remember like clubs like Liberty Lunch or like the Black Cap. They have the doors open too, so I guess they're not trying to air condition the street, you know. Yeah. By the way, like that's a very annoying phrase. Like
what, air conditioning the street?
Hey, I ain't trying to air condition the street. Close the door. Like, there's a certain kind of person that says that.
That just makes me think of like leaving the refrigerator door open when I was a kid, and I. Getting all kinds of trouble, like
not trying to air
not trying to refrigerate kitchen. The kitchen or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, right.
But no, this record reminds me, like, okay, so I saw the OCs. This would have been like 2010 or something.
I thought you were going to be talking about that fucking show that was on Fox.
I know what you're talking about, Ryan.
Oh, yes. No, not that show about Orange County. No, I saw the band, the OCs, T-H-E-E-O-H-S-E-E-S, at Beerland during South By, and that place was fucking packed, probably like a fire hazard, except for that.
Those guys can get loud.
Yeah, and it was just, everybody was just like, they were right in the middle of the club, not on the stage for some reason, and it was just super sweaty, and everybody was super excited. This record makes me feel that way.
That's what I'm saying. It's like the oral, like, I have, like, synesthesia, kind of, when I listen to this, like, record.
Yeah, you, like, get transported to that place.
Yeah, it's like, it's the oral equivalent of, like,
I can taste purple.
Yeah.
I'm seeing Seven and, I don't know, Plaid. I don't know.
All right, let's do another one of these songs.
What you want?
I think the other real standout track is that Generations song.
Generations.
Yeah. I mean, it's spelled Generations, but I think what they're going for is Generations. Like, that's what I think. I don't know. Could all be right, wrong.
Let's just listen to it and decide for ourselves.
All right. First time, I'll be so far.
Shane, I totally concur that is a standout track. And it's got, like, bells in it. You know, like the giant bells that you would knock with a hammer?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's
Glockenspiel?
I guess it's kind of like, well, I think Glockenspiel are more like right in front of you, but it was like the big stand-up, like, tubular bells that you'd knock on. But, like, they used it to great effect, and I appreciate it. And it also reminds me a little, and it's a less crass way of doing it, but there's a Buzzcocks song called Orgasm Addict.
It's a good song.
It's a great song, but yeah, and this one, it's like, she can't be alone, you know, it's just, it's personal critique by way of punk rock, and I appreciate that.
I knew you were going to fucking love this record, man.
Yeah, dude, no, you you knew.
Ryan's eyes are just like, they're like all lit up.
I'm a Twitter.
That's good stuff. No, man, that's fucking Buzzcocks, by the way. We should have one of their records on this. That's a band that
I know. I have their greatest hits, and so I know a bunch of their stuff, but I've never listened to a whole LP.
Yeah, they're a great band. I never think. It's one of those bands you hear, every time you hear one of their songs, you're like, oh, fuck.
I saw them in the 90s at Emo's, and they were probably in their mid to late 50s, and they still fucking brought it. Like, they were super solid.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Kevin, you got something over there?
You know, I mean,
I think that's a stopgap measure right there.
Yeah, no,
you might be a redneck if
your house collapses and it kills more than one dog.
I don't know. Anyway, no, that's I thought this phrase kind of stuck with me. Another snippet from that same NPR review. This guy refers to them as a rowdy, ramshackle party house of a band built on the intersecting bedrock of post punk and indie rock. On Poor People Are Revolting, there's something crazy going on in every room, the front porch and the backyard, a party that never dies down or seems to stop even as the neighbors complain and the cops drive past.
That was like the best summation of this round. It's like there are so many things that just says what we've been taught. Like the other thing I was thinking about is house parties where there's a band in the backyard kind of thing.
Like, yeah, and you can go in and like or like a band in the living room or whatever.
Band in the living room, right?
It's kind of like one of those, and the cops show up and everybody clears out, but the band just keeps playing because they don't notice. Like that.
Yeah.
Till somebody
all the
gets shot.
Who are 20 and under clear out. Everybody else who's. You know, got the beers like, fuck it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You weren't with me when I was at that party that got busted when I was 21, but everybody I was with was younger. My friend Ken got arrested, but the best thing about it was like in this little, like, kind of Melrose Place type courtyard apartment complex, and some guys on the third floor started playing the Cops theme, Bad Boys, Bad Boys, and while all these people were getting arrested.
That's pretty, it was great. Funny, man.
Yeah. Oh, I just hung out because I was like, fuck it. I'm
yeah,
21.
No, I definitely have done my time, or had done my time at plenty of parties busted up by the cops before I turned 21. And
oh,
like
yeah. I've spent a little time in the Husco.
This is off the beaten path. When I was in high school, we had a big party, and we got busted. And, like, idiots, because my friend's grandparents were out of town, and, like, fucking idiots, we had one the next night, and it got busted. But that time, we were smart about it, and we had, like, a secret place where we hid all the booze, and, like, they basically were just there with their hands on their hips. Because they're like, these fucking idiots, like, they have a party, get busted, like, we all got tickets, and then the next night, we did it again. That's why you shouldn't put 17-year-olds in prison, because you make really dumb decisions because your brain isn't formed yet.
It's true. I couldn't agree more. We were talking about music at some point.
Yeah, yeah, I know. But this band starts making me think about house parties and shit. Like,
no, it just puts you in that feeling.
It being like 22 yeah. years old and like, you know, sweaty and.
All right. At some point, we should probably get to the intermission.
Who's
got it this week?
Kevin to have it this week. All right. Well,
let's play some intermission music. And,
go do it.
Cool.
What is it? So yeah, we're halfway through the show, and that typically means that this is time for us to regale you with another track. And typically, the way that this we're gonna spend a few minutes with a different track. I want to say before I reveal what the track is that sometimes when I choose the track for what we call the intermission segment, sometimes that is intentionally like a little bit of a pivot or a sorbet or like something that is intended to be like kind of a palate cleanser from whatever it is that we've been listening to.
I'm glad that you clarified that, because I was just thinking like a pivot and a sorbet I get it. But yeah, for a second there, I was
we're doing something a little bit different.
It's a culinary pivot.
I know. I understand.
Anyway. Yeah. So what I'm saying is this is not that. This is the band
staying
that
right in line with where we've been.
The band that we've been listening to made me think of something else that I haven't listened to in a while, and I was like, oh, that band was really great, and one of the better live shows I've ever seen at South by Southwest, which is coming up. So the band is a band from Manhattan, Kansas, called Ultimate Fakebook. And they put out a record in 1999 called This Is Laughing Week. And we're going to listen to a track off of that record. And I think it's called Tell Me What You Want. So there's not a video for this, but the song's worth...
Well, that really only matters for us.
Yeah, well, theater of the mind, Shane. Let's do it.
Night in June, I'm crawling out from a silk cocoon. I hit the town, put on my shoes, 'cause Friday night I fall in love. She comes into view from out of nowhere, a girl so cool. She makes me sick of my excuses, now I gotta see this through.
So my memory of seeing that band at South By was they were playing some shitty, no-name, you know, garbage bar on 6th Street.
Sounds about right.
And
I would name one that now. I would buy one.
Shitty garbage bar.
Shitty, no-name garbage bar.
shitty, no-name garbage bar. Yeah, but anyway, they're like the bar that they were playing in itself was like not anything interesting, but it was one of those where they threw the doors open and the windows were open, and... And that whole place was like a cauldron on the inside of, like, you know, just, you know, a little bit of a mosh thing going on. And then there was a, you know, a crowd on the sidewalk that was kind of doing the same thing, but with a lot more room. So anyway, it was, you know, one of the, you know, at the time, one of the more memorable shows I've caught. And the other thing that I was a little bit struck by was, like, you know, there's no, like, that's about as tight as a band can get. Like,
yeah,
they're just
pretty tight.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, that was Ultimate Fake Book off their This Is Laughing Week record.
Oh, nice little pop song.
It's a ditty.
Yeah, a little. Well, yeah, and I looked up their Wikipedia while we were listening to that, and it says they're a power pop band, but I think they're kind of like between, like, the Posies and, like, Blink 182.
Well, so I was going to say Jimmy Eat World.
Like, yeah,
it was
like
the
same
Posies
deal.
And Jimmy Eat World. Like, and there was a little Elvis Costello in there sometimes, a little bit with his voice for sure. But
yeah, it sounded like, I don't know, I like the band better than I like the vocalist.
Yeah. No, well, that's the reason. It's that style of singing that was really predominant in that era. Like the Blink 182, like the really effectless, flat, like no vibrato. Like,
well,
I don't know.
It just makes me think of like Chain Wallets and Synchronized Jumping.
Oh. Well, it's a very specific style, but like.
But better. I think this band was better than most of those.
Brian's version of the Olympics is weird.
Hey, yeah, I did very much appreciate, since a couple of months ago I picked a Poison record, that these guys' swan song album was called Open Up and Say Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
A little wink and a nudge. Funny. Yeah, good times.
Yeah. Oh, Poison.
So, anyway, yeah, that was Ultimate Fake Book. I've never looked. I assume that they have an Ultimate Facebook, Ultimate Fake Book page. But
groan.
Yeah,
groan,
whatever.
Groan.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you knew he was on fire from the time you fucking got here today.
It's true.
Yeah, we're not going to start.
He's your goddamn brother.
Right. We're
Hey, I'm not taking responsibility. He came first.
Yep.
The Ultimate Fake Book Facebook?
It is.
All right.
Yes, it is. Anyway.
That was a tasty little nugget.
Yeah, fun little thing.
Yeah. There you go. Sometimes you have your dessert in the middle of the meal. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, that kind of band is definitely a sugar rush. But you know, they do this cool thing, like they did this cool thing where they like did a like a minor bar chord and strum all the way through it, distorted. It's a nice full.
You're looking at me like you think I know what you're talking about.
No, I'm not saying you do. There's just a specific sound there that I liked. I enjoyed.
Well, I'm glad.
You're welcome. Yeah. Or I'm welcome, I guess.
Yes. You are welcome.
Thank
Jane.
Me.
I'm pretty, yes.
Thank you very much.
Me.
Hey, I welcomed you to some of this fine Admiral Nelson's premium spiced rum.
I did have some of that Admiral Nelson's, and I think I'm about to have some more. They call it premium spiced rum, but really it just tastes like vanilla.
It tastes like vanilla.
It tastes like how strippers smell.
Oh,
wow. That's super specific.
it actually says that on the bottle.
Does
it tastes like strippers
smell. Admiral Nelson. It tastes like how strippers smell.
I don't know why that's
glitter?
In quotes.
Right, there's little. Well, it's sort of like Goldschlager, except instead of like the gold foil, it's like little pieces of glitter. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, kids, let's get back into the go-to-beds.
Coming out of the break now. That's a...
Yeah.
I was working on that.
So did you notice that if you try to look up the go-to-beds on Wikipedia, that it shoots you to the drummer for Wires page? Robert Go-to-Bed?
No.
Which I can only assume that's how they got the name.
Yeah, no, that is.
Is that how they got it?
It's a riff on his name, yeah.
Oh, I thought it was just, again, them being like doing that punky punny stuff like, you kids go to bed.
Well, no, there's that, and they also were distributed. This record was distributed by 12XU, which is a Wire reference in and of itself. I think it's a Wire song.
You know, that band pops up a lot in my life, and I'm completely unfamiliar with their music.
I had a roommate who was really into the album Pink Flag, which is kind of like their, no pun intended, flagship record, like the one they're known for mostly. That might be one to bring up, because I don't remember it that well. but you know, kind of angular, you know, punky late 70s shit.
It's pretty much. I mean, I've heard I think a couple songs here and there, and yeah, angular.
The other one that comes up a lot with this band, the Go-To-Beds, is The Fall, and I don't know dick about The Fall, and I've heard about them.
And they tend to mention The Fall around the time that they talk a little bit about Pavement influences, and you can hear some of those. Each one of those acts.
All I know about The Fall is apparently the fucking singer guy,
Mark E. Smith,
is a total douchebag.
Oh.
But, oh, okay. So Mark has pulled up a timeline and shows all the former members of The Fall.
Yeah.
And
there's only one that's constant.
Mark E. Smith is the only one that's. Think he's a dick?
Could be.
But also, again, they're.
Dude, you're Johnny on the spot with that. Mark, like that's crazy.
I was looking for I because it just came up this weekend. I saw somebody post something, and I want to say it was needlepoint or some sort of macrame or other crafty thing where this person did these little portraitures of every single person that's played in The Fall. And it made me think of that. I was trying
to find
it's
a lot. What are we looking at? Like 30?
No, it looks like 50.
More than that, like 40 or 50, yeah.
Well, yeah, but here, so here's a, when we talked about this a couple of weeks ago about a lot of members, but I mean, the band has also been around for 40 years as of this year, so.
Still, dude.
I know, it's a lot of fucking people, man.
66 members over 41 years.
Wow.
With about a third of the musicians lasting for less than a year. Yeah, like apparently the dude is a total fucking asshole. That's all
I'm
I
sure
know.
Like all these every single one of them came into it going like, "Oh, this is an opportunity of a lifetime." And then like a couple months in they're like, "What the fuck have I done?
Fuck this."
Yeah.
So you kids at home are probably wondering, "What does this have to do with the Go-To-Beds?"
Well, apparently the Go-To-Beds cite them as a big influence. I don't know much about The Fall.
Oh, I thought the way that you were saying it is like you were just about to drop some kind of bomb that you figured out or something. But yes.
No,
I'm just trying to get us back on.
No,
track.
I know we're going off on little side streets here. Yeah, I don't know.
You want to pick another song?
Yeah, let's do it. I do want to pick. What was it? Sex Machine or wait, that's James Brown.
Sex Tape.
No,
it was Fucking Machine.
Fucking Machine, right? I want to listen to that purely because I'm very.
Well, you know that's a real thing, right? Like there are actual machines. Real sex on HBO.
No, I know what it is.
Done a whole segment on it and like.
No, there's a whole. I used to work at a porn store. Yeah,
that is true.
There, yeah, there's a whole like. Name for it, I can't.
Subculture of
subculture, yeah, as well. But anyway. I really love, and they endeared themselves to me very much when, in the beginning of the song, they sample, just for a second, Everybody Dance Now by CNC Music Factory.
Oh, yeah,
so.
And that took me to a very specific place, and
yeah.
I'll expound later.
Gonna make you sweat is what I'm thinking the reference is there, but... Okay, well, yeah, let's do it. Let's do it, Mark.
Appetite overcomes intention every time. The working class is not fat. It's no longer fed.
Fucking shit.
That song, I was going to say this earlier, and one of the artists that we haven't talked about in relation to maybe influences, that sounds like the Modern Lovers a little bit, like the way he sings on
a
it.
I get like an Irish pub dirge kind of thing off
I think
off
it's
of
the
it.
Sound. He's got a... Yeah, I'm not saying the song sounds like the Modern Lovers. There's just a thing with the way that he's singing.
There's a little Jonathan Richman-esque
thing going on there. I can hear that in there.
Well, and there's a lot of humor in Modern Lovers, and there's a lot of humor all over this record, but not so much that it, It's not like Tenacious D where it just sucks. Like, usually I don't like my humor and my music together.
Weird Al Yankovic?
Yeah.
Yankovic or Yankovic?
Yankovic.
I never know. I don't know.
I don't know.
I mean, I never met the band, but...
That's what you're...
I'm not
you're
sure why you looked at me. Like, am I supposed to look that up? Right?
Because he gave me a very, very solid answer, and I was just looking for you to...
One thing that we haven't really talked about to a great degree is the fact that these guys really appreciate the double entendre, like almost like as much as like a like quirky country records.
Right, like, that's what I was saying. Like, there's
well, yeah, you said something while the song was playing. Like, I'm not sure what you meant though.
Okay, so like if somebody says, "Ah, that thing runs with like a fucking machine or whatever," like it, you know, like if you're like,
or you could just be, you know, angry at it.
Yeah.
To me, the song just sounds like a pub dirge that you hoist a pint to and kind of sway.
Yeah, yeah. But
and the name of the song just kind of is incidental. Well, it shows up. Incidental,
but I'm saying that it could mean a couple of different things, just like the title of this album. It could be like you're a fucking machine or like sometimes like if you...
Or a literal thing that has like a automated dong.
Well, yeah, I know, but also like if you have like, you know, that thing runs like a fucking machine, like, you know, your bar staff could be like, you know, really tight, or your band could be really tight, like, you know, some...
Anyway, this track was one example of that. The name of the record is another example of that. Like,
yeah, people are revolting.
Yeah. So it's like they're clearly having a little bit of fun with like, and, you know, if you listen to the way the songs are executed, it doesn't sound like they take themselves that seriously. So, you know, don't think about it too hard, peoples.
They take themselves just seriously enough that the music is really good.
I wish that Wimpy Garcia was the name of somebody in the band.
Wimpy Garcia is...
It might be a nickname.
A fucking awesome song title, and...
Shane has a thorny relationship with Jerry Garcia.
Well, I wasn't even
why
thinking
Jerry?
About,
who
I wasn't,
cares?
I wasn't thinking. Like, I was just Garcia.
That's where I go with it. Hey, it just makes me think of the song you wrote in homage to Jerry Garcia back in the day. It has like one word in the lyrics.
Jerry song.
Yep.
Yeah.
Jerry.
Yeah, yeah. That's good. That's good stuff. I mean, there's a lot of Garcias out there in the world.
That's true. There are more than one.
Wimpy obviously is one of them, but that's, you know.
Yeah, he eats a lot of like hamburgers, but they're on.
That's where you go.
Yeah, they're on tortillas.
All right, man. You guys want to do one more?
Well, yeah, the one that I like quite a bit, and it does have a little bit of that like kind of early aughts sound to it. But I like Rollin Benny.
Yeah, it's a good song. I don't care where the sound comes
actually,
from.
Actually, you know what? Let's do Sex Tape because it reminds me of a Chicago song. But if they like took a bunch of acid and like played on a bed of rusty nails,
okay, let's do that. Let's do that. Right. And that's another.
It's a super long song. We're obviously not going to play the whole thing.
Yeah, but. Yeah. All right, let's do Sex Tape.
Yeah, like Mark just played a little snippet of 25 or 64 by Chicago, and like it's the same fucking riff, but just taken from a completely different tack.
Yeah, you're right. I didn't know what that was. It's like that little chromatic thing. Like, yeah.
Yeah, but if somebody had slipped Chicago a bunch of acid and then locked him in a room with a bunch of rusty nails, that might have been what you got.
Locked him in like a tiny punk club. And
it also a little bit, not necessarily sonically, but remind me of that hidden track on Nirvana's Nevermind, Endless Nameless, that just goes on where they just kind of like have this weird riff that goes in and out, and they just kind of Kurt just kind of like squalls.
Is that like a hidden? It's at the end of
If you have the CD, like
I didn't ever listen to
the record will end, and then you go through like a good 5 minutes of nothing, and then this hidden track shows up, and it's about as focused as that song.
So what you're saying is not very.
No, not very.
There's a reason why they put that song at the end of the record.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I still enjoy it, but like it goes on and on and on, and like,
yeah, it's a little long and meandery for me. Like, but you know, it's not bad. It's like not like, like what were you saying, Tenacious? It's not like Tenacious D.
Oh, dude, that shit is interminable to me.
Yeah, no, you and I are on the same page there.
I'm definitely filing that one away for.
Dude,
for some time
don't make me regret having brought that up.
Oh, you know what? I forgot to say this, but what I was going to do for this week instead of this album was Limp Bizkit. And
that might be amusing.
Well, okay, so here's the thing. Here's the reason why I didn't pick it. Because their three like albums at the height of their popularity. Like 1997, 1999,
the giant toilet phase.
Yeah, like when they were really famous and shit. Then there was one. However, they do have one of the most amusing. Like it was like the something chocolate in the hot dog water or something. Like
whatever.
Yeah. So, but anyway,
something chocolate in the hot dog water.
That's like the name of the record. It's like something chocolate.
This may be shocking to you, but I've never owned a Limp Bizkit record.
Yes, I know. None of us have ever listened to anything by Limp Bizkit except like...
Like when forced to?
Yes. So, but... Chocolate Starfish and the Hot Dog Flavored Water. That's the name of the album they put out in like 2000. So, anyway, but none of the... Okay, that album is 75 minutes long. And the two before it are over an hour long, and I'm not going to make you guys listen to fucking Limp Bizkit for an hour.
Well, I appreciate that.
So if they had like some sort of like EP or some shit, I probably would have fucking done it. But
Kevin, did you have something queued up you wanted to read?
Fred Durst is the worst. That's not what I wanted to read, but I just feel compelled to share.
That was concise, and I appreciate that.
It was. No,
yeah, he's pretty bad.
Yeah, no, and frankly, like just looking at when that record came out, there are a lot of people that are listed as producers on that album that get talked about in that Hot Carl book that I keep bringing up, the Kanye West owes me $300. Anyway, that's that whole era of Interscope where Fred Durst plays like essentially, it's shocking, but he's kind of an asshole.
What?
Yeah, no, it's true. Anyway, Homeboy I actually found a CMJ review of this record, which I was like, oh, well, I got to bring that in. Homeboy says basically that, you know, the question about this record is like one of the questions that the band seems to be asking is like, you know, along the lines of those double entendres is like, what are you going to do with your life? And he says the answer so far on this debut seems to be we're going to crank out tunes like Mid Sonic Youth and as an impatient garage band. Bouncy riffs are played clangy in tone, but with taut with tension, hyperrhythms, bug-eyed collegiate yelping and sneaky hooks all kind of band together like a band who's been played way more shows than they should have at this stage. So anyway, you know, I don't know. I didn't know
CMJ was still a thing.
Well,
it's an online
New
entity.
Music Monthly is not a thing, but I mean, I guess apparently they put out it's still an industry rag.
Okay.
And so like I assume that they just review when they feel like it or
but that's pretty concise, and it brought up the other thing that, you know, this record kind of reminded me of was that kind of garage rock thing that was happening in like the late 90s, early aughts. Hives, Vines, that kind of thing, where, you know, some of these are just ridiculous hooks, and
yeah,
good on them.
Well, and even the track that we were just listening to, like, you know, you were talking about the 25 or 64.
Yeah, now, like, I got that fucking song in my head.
I know. Once you hear it, it's like now it's stuck in there. All I can see
it's
here,
the
like,
exact same riff, just way dirtier.
It is way, yeah, it is way dirtier. And like, it's like the thing about their version of it is like they just don't seem to be like, they play that riff over and over again and they don't seem to be in any hurry to go anywhere.
No hurry whatsoever. Like, they're just gonna screw around and
see
where it goes and then the end of the record.
Yeah, so you kind of it gives you like that song in particular just kind of gave me an appreciation for sort of what this band's all about. They're not, they are, in many ways, they're the opposite of the short Dolly Parton ditty. Yeah.
Well, that there, song, certainly.
There are certain tracks that are not particularly long, but it's like, in general, like, they don't mind breaking a few glasses along the way.
Well, I know I mentioned it earlier, but I just kept coming back to, like, these guys sound like they genuinely love playing with each other. And I mean that in the musical sense. Like, they genuinely enjoy each other's company. And, like, that song, you know, is a good example of that. Like, they don't need to go anywhere. You know, we're having fun right now.
I don't want to sidebar too far in this, mm-hmm. but it does remind me of, like, one of the things that, like, I saw the, you know, I've mentioned before that, I haven't read the whole thing because the book is fucking huge, but I will pick up and read for a while and then put down the Peter Hook story on Joy Division.
Yeah.
And I saw there was a movie that came out about that band too. And one of the things that he said in the end of it always stuck with me, which was like, he said, you know, he was like, we were all like really pretty much on the same page from day one, and it was easy. And I feel mm-hmm. like really good bands, a lot of the time, we talk about on this show a lot how they come out of the womb, so to speak, like fully formed. I feel like these guys
have like a unique chemistry with each other where they just are like, oh, yep, this is it.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you changed one person, it would be just a completely different band.
It would be The Fall.
It would be The Fall. If you change 60 people.
It's like you could have a whole section full of people that used to be in The Fall.
You remember that review
Fell,
that I,
as it were.
I read? I'm trying to remember where it was, but it was like right after Bill Berry left and then R.E.M. put out a record without him. And it was like they just look over at the
right.
I think it was Up. But it was like, you know, they just look over at the empty drummer chair and just miss him. And you can totally tell.
Isn't that dude like a fucking farmer now?
Yeah, he farms hay.
Yeah, well, sure.
I mean, he's a multi millionaire. Hey, you know what I'm going to do today? I'm going to let my unibrow grow in and,
and go farm some hay.
That's good stuff. All right, Ryan, you're welcome. And
yeah, thanks, man. I love it so much.
I do not want to hear any fucking whining next time I pick something that you're not. That's not totally.
You've bought yourself some political capital.
I mean, you can whine about it all you want during the broadcast, but I don't want any whining after the show or before the show. Like,
all right, Mom.
What about during the breaks?
Well, I mean, yeah, you can whine during the breaks, whatever.
All right, so who's got the
Ryan's got it.
The thing?
Ryan, what's
oh
got?
Yeah, Nina Diaz.
Oh,
yes, it's just going to be a performance video, and I actually have forgotten the name of the song, so I'm going to have to look it up right now.
All right, well,
but I did remember that I had this, and it is one of the first things that pops up.
So I played
January 9th.
I played it. This is a great fucking song. I played it. She used to be the singer for Girl in a Coma.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
And I just, yeah, no, I just happened to hear on our favorite radio station the other day,
yeah,
KUTX, and I Shazammed her, and I'm like, oh, this is really good. I looked her up, and I'm like, oh, that's why I like she was in Girl in a Coma.
All right. Well, let's listen to it.
All right.
Every time I try to find another place to stay, every time I try to look away, you seem to cave. Oh, in the back of my mind, in the back of my mind. Every time I try to look away, I scream your name. Every time I try to walk away, I stay the same. Oh, in the back of my mind, in the back of my mind. I don't wanna be the bad one. I don't wanna be the sad one that you find. You find. And I don't wanna be the bad one. I don't wanna be the sad one that you.
So like That wasn't even the song that I Shazammed, but I found that in the course of checking that out.
Checking
and like,
her out.
God damn that song.
It's a good song.
And I'm not generally one for like performance videos, and not only was it a performance video, it was a live performance.
Well, it's a live performance, but here's let's just go ahead and let everybody in on the secret. There's probably a real good reason why you're okay with that live performance video.
She's not hard to look at.
No, it's real easy to watch her.
Well, she also like is clearly enjoying herself and really into it, and also punk rock Ren Faire.
Yeah, let's talk about the bass player for a second, because we could talk all goddamn day long about how incredibly attractive Nina Diaz is, but her bass player,
he's an odd looking dude.
Okay, so there's a couple of things going on. So let's spell it out. So number one, he's playing a 7-string bass.
I don't think I've ever seen one of those.
Well, okay, so let's
certainly
talk
not
about
in person.
Seven-string guitars are guitars that were Ibanez started putting them out in the 80s. They're like the kind of like Steve Vai and other guitars.
Yeah, Ibanez was always like the kind of noodly quasi metal company.
Look, if anybody shows up at a gig or an audition with a 6-string bass, I'm just like, thank you very much for your time.
Like, yeah, ready to go.
I don't need you. But he's also got like kind of like tri or quad colored hair, bunch of piercings, tattoos.
Well, and like the kind of quasi, not a faux hawk.
No, where they
got
shaved
on the sides, but long down
but
the back.
And, like,
yeah.
it was a real '90s, like early '90s thing. There was a certain kind of guy that.
He ably played his instrument.
No, he sounded great. He sounded great.
He's just a weird looking dude.
It was just an odd looking. Stylistic sartorial choices are being made.
Correct. But man, fantastic song. Like even
I
if she
know.
Even
like
if
it.
She
Kevin,
wasn't
what did
hot,
you think?
Those Tiny Desk shows are like 9 times out of 10 are always a kick. Like I think, you know, for the same reason that the that some of the unplugged stuff plays really well elsewhere, you know, you get to see bands are kind of on the rise doing their element. In this case, you know, I think like it's a pretty like one thing that struck me was like the kind of the power behind her voice and like what an intimate setting that was. It was like, you know, it was that played a little bit like she looked like she could carry a bigger room than that without too much trouble.
Drummer was playing brushes and like
nobody was
but
mic. It's just room mics. Like the guitars weren't plugged in. Like she didn't have a. Did she have a mic in front of her?
I
vocals?
Think so. Yeah.
If she did, I can't remember. I definitely wasn't looking at the
but
mic.
But I mean, the mix sounded great.
Yeah, the whole room sounded good. The guitars weren't plugged in. It was
so. Do we know? Okay, I don't know a whole lot about the Tiny Desk series of NPR stuff. But it is an NPR show.
Yeah, we've done a couple of them in the past. I think I know that
we've done at least one. And
I know that I've played one, but yeah, it's a great series. It you know.
Yeah, they're really terrific. Our friend Phil has done a couple of these.
Are they like a bookstore, record store?
They're in the studios. They're in like the NPR studios in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, well, they're just a lot of racks.
It's like somebody's fucking like office.
Bob Boylan's office. He's the guy that kind of produces it. And
anyway, like, I was just like, oh, dude, this is. And I think this was just recorded like 2 or 3 months ago. So, anyway, very current.
Still got the new car smell.
Not like 7 years ago.
Yes.
That you just discovered. Current for you.
Yeah.
Well, all right. That was good stuff.
So this was episode 99. Is that right?
It was episode 99. And next week, we are going to be doing a supersize.
Well, not next week.
Or next week for.
Next show.
Next show.
Okay, not next week. Next week is fucking South by Southwest, and none of us have time for this show during that.
But it'll be a mixtape.
We're gonna do a supersized mixtape show, and we'll
reveal all.
Yeah, but we have things in motion, and so yay, we made it to 100 almost.
Woo!
All right, fingers crossed, we'll make it through next week alive. But
if you would like a piece of the cake that we'll be serving at the 100 episode. Just drop us a line at messagesomebody@gmail.com.
Subject line: Send me some of that cake.
Or find us on Facebook or whatever, but
there's places.
Anyway, for now, who are you?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Kevin.
And I'm Mark.
Somebody likes it.